This is one of the most famous songs in Americana. This is the Maple Leaf Rag, played by Scott Joplin, written by Scott Joplin. Not performed live, because Scott Joplin is, of course, dead. Died 100 years ago today. Well, technically, April 1st, 1917. Mm-hmm. You and I, Vinny, had a theory about how he died. And we pledged not to look up how he actually died.
We're not going to find out. I know I've had people threaten me. They've threatened to tell me.
I am not a man of my word. I looked it up. Uh-huh. I looked it up because we had said that he had been, like shot in a duel or something, which seemed like the most ragtime way possible to die. But no, he found an even more ragtime way to go.
Do I want to hear?
Yes.
I do.
Yes.
You sure?
Yes. He was locked in a sanitarium due to dementia from syphilis.
Ah.
And then after 3 months, they just say he died. You don't need to know how. That's a whole other mystery, but that's how we ended this.
Why is that the most ragtime way to go? Dementia from syphilis.
Well, syphilis is nowadays just sort of a jokey thing.
You know what's funny? Actually, all right, I've mentioned before that I teach.
I thought you were going to say I've mentioned before I have syphilis.
I have syphilis. At my school, for whatever reason, the health teacher spends an inordinate amount of time on syphilis.
Yeah,
like. I see students walking around with these giant, projects, like dioramas. Like, dioramas devoted to syphilis. As if this was going to be the main threat. Like I don't think she covers teen pregnancy. Even. Or, herpes? No. Nothing like that. It's all about the biggest danger you have.
Well, syphilis as a danger
is to go the way of Errol Flynn.
But Scott Joplin and ragtime itself were ended at the same time. Historians consider the death of Scott Joplin to be the end of ragtime.
So ragtime died from syphilis.
Ragtime died from syphilis, yes. Now, I think it was more that it was just a very convenient overlapping, because within a week, Scott Joplin died and we declared war. So, you can say World War I began when Scott Joplin died, so that's a good way of ending ragtime.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still going to play ragtime for a while, because that's the music you think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not smart enough to know what other music they played.
Another thing that we could probably look up,
It was hard for me to not play Janis Joplin, because, you got a Joplin, it's good enough. They play music. Our next-door neighbor's dog is named Joplin. And
after Scott Joplin?
I always thought that if there was a couple, and one of them like rock and roll and one of them like jazz, they should get a dog and name it Joplin, because you could say, no, it's named after Scott Joplin. No, it's named after Janis Joplin. Scott Joplin, Janis Joplin. Let's just agree on Joplin.
That's adorable. That'll be an adorable couple thing to do.
But then I asked them, and they both like Janis Joplin.
But your actual neighbors, by the way, I pulled up your, they're outside with a screaming baby.
Oh, well, babies scream sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I've had kids.
Yeah.
You know.
You had kids. It's a long movie you saw one time. I'm well aware. I've seen that thing.
Yeah, no, I pulled up. I kind of gave the guy a knowing look, but I could tell he was not amused by me giving even my knowing look annoyed me. Like, I expected him to beat me over the head with the baby.
Hold on. Knowing look is that a hey buddy, I've been there too, or is that a get that baby up?
No. I've been there. Okay, I've been outside with a baby.
Okay, yeah,
screaming.
My babies always loved it outside. When they were crying, we'd go outside, and then they would stop crying.
Yeah. Oftentimes, it's the change of scenery. Yeah. I used to do the drive around.
I always thought there was something very caveman atavistic about it. Like this is how we are all supposed to be experiencing our entire lives
outdoors.
Yeah, and this baby's been in the modern cave for so long that we give her a half hour every other day of outside time.
But the idea of you as a caveman though is pretty funny. I have to say.
I don't think I'd be a very good caveman.
No. Even the fact I wouldn't want to be a caveman just for the fact that they didn't have glasses. And like I would just be blind. I'd be a blind caveman.
I'm imagining me like starting up conversations with the people about, so, you've got a club, but is that the best club? I have this club here. Now, this club is a little bit shorter, but it's thicker. So what are you looking for in a club?
See, I just picture I'd be like banging my head on stalagmites. Or is it stalactite? What hangs down?
Oh, there was something I remembered. A stalactite would fall tight. No. A stalagmite might fall. A stalactite, I don't know how it works with one. I remembered one of them, but not the other.
Well, one. Might fall, I guess. Would be
yeah. Stalagmite on top.
Because I'm blind, and they have not. There's no cave optician.
Right.
So I'd have to.
You know, I have cave experience.
I know you. Your brother's a caver, right?
Yes, he took me.
By the way, we didn't start the show yet.
Oh, we probably should at some point. Oh, welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and with me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.
All right, go back to the cave, then.
Okay, I was locked in a cave.
How do you lock a cave? Is there a door?
I should have said that before we went into the intro, because that would have been a really great cut. I was like, oh, I got to know about locking the cave. So, yes, there is a door. Most caves are owned on private property, and there were drunk teenagers who go in. So the owners of like the land where the cave is on is like, I don't want these drunk teenagers. So they pour some concrete and they stick some aluminum frames in.
I'm pretty sure it looks like a hobbit hole almost.
It looks more like a drilling thing. It doesn't look at all pleasant or fun. It looks very utilitarian, but it's a way of keeping people out, but keeping like smaller things like foxes and wolves could get in.
Yeah.
But anyway, so my brother knew the guy who got the key, so they unlocked the key and we all went inside and we locked the cave behind us, because there could be a real problem if you leave the cave unlocked for 4 hours and meanwhile some teenagers wander in, and then as you go out you lock the door behind you, and then teenagers are stuck in the cave.
Yeah
So
how big is this cave?
This cave is huge,
like a Fraggle cave.
It's not a Fraggle cave in terms of size, but in terms of you can just keep going.
Yeah.
The caverns, there's just more caverns after each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very substantial, and it's about 55 degrees. And it was around this time of year. So it was a little bit chillier than average inside, but not cold. You know, it was a pleasant temperature. So we do our 2 or 3 hours of cave exploration. And as we go back, one of the leaders of the trip goes up, and she gets the key. She puts it in the lock. And she turns it, and the key breaks off in the lock.
Oh, no.
That's because it's just like a regular gym lock, and it was near the ground, and it got like all sorts of dirt in it. So it was too hard to turn the key, and we turned it too much, it broke off.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm right behind her, and, you know, it's a cave, so it's closed conditions. So she gets this look on her face, and she turns around, and then she very slowly, very dramatically shows me the broken key. And I'm like, this is the first time I've been in a cave. Is this supposed to happen? Is this a trick?
And your brother's like the old pro at this. So.
Yeah. So I quickly realized, no, this is not a trick. And so I yell down, and we assembly line realize, okay, so we're all stuck in the cave.
How quickly were you guys considering cannibalism?
Not cannibalism, but we did have emergency rations, and we quickly went through the emergency rations.
Like within like minutes?
Yeah, within minutes. And we had those space heater blankets that are just like pieces of like aluminum with foil on them. And we ate the granola bars that we had, and we wrapped ourselves in our little aluminum shawls, and they like preserved heat just a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we were thinking like, okay, we could be here for like 5 minutes until someone gets another.
Is there a cell phone like reception you have?
No, there's not. And this was old enough ago so that people didn't really have cell phones. So we were wondering like, well, if we're here for 4 days, we need to conserve food. If we're here for like half an hour, you know, we'll just wait. So I decided, okay, it's going to be about 3 hours.
Why would you be there 4 days? Somebody knew you went to this cave, right?
Yes.
Like at some point.
I'm going to make a medium-sized story short. And there was a group of people who had left before us. They quickly realized that we were taking a while. They came back. And cavers are all sort of like engineering punks. So they all had Leatherman tools and Swiss Army knives. So they all had like tools in order to clamp onto things and pull them off. So they got rid of the key, the broken key shaft, and they got a new key and put it in, because I guess they had a backup key, and we all got out. But for a half hour, I was trapped in a cave.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not exactly Floyd. What was it? His name?
Mayweather.
No, Floyd Landis. No, Floyd. Now I'm thinking Floyd Mayweather. There was a famous Floyd who got stuck in a cave. Floyd Collins. I think his name was Floyd Collins.
You know, you spent all that time to come up with a name that nobody would recognize.
If my brother is listening, he knows.
Floyd Collins. He's very happy right now.
He gave me a whole book about Floyd Collins, which I have not read.
I'm picturing he was very excited. Like, oh, I don't. He started telling you Floyd Collins stories, and you were like, oh, no, don't spoil it for me. Don't spoil it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's too exciting.
You know, there's a Kirk Douglas movie where he mentions Floyd Collins one time.
It's like a well known Kirk Douglas movie?
Yeah. Ace in the Hole.
Or I think it was like a push stroke kind of thing. No. Where...
like Greed?
Yeah, something like that, where we don't really know what he was signing, you know? He was trying to say flood insurance, and it came out as Floyd Collins.
He's doing one of those things like the older actors do where they start selling term life insurance on daytime TV.
What do you have to say, Kirk Douglas? Floyd Collins.
Oh, do you remember those Bob Hope commercials in the 90s for Kmart?
No.
Oh, I actually had a conversation with you about this, but I guess it disappeared.
So there's another Bob Hope thing I remember more clearly.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about that later.
He was like 95 years old, and they had him doing Kmart commercials. And all he says is, this is big. And, you know, he's a 95-year-old man. He's not expected
to. He doesn't know where he is at this point.
So they have him doing in like Charlie Chaplin fast motion, walking into the Kmart.
Yeah.
And you can tell they're playing fast music, but they're doing it because he's walking like a 95-year-old man. And they're trying to make it funny.
6 days to film. 6 days to get him walking.
You had made a joke like the first 19 takes of the line was, this is a big Walmart. No, Bob, cut. It's a Kmart. Just say Kmart. Or just don't say Walmart. Okay, action. This Walmart is a big Kmart. Cut. Bob, just... Just say the
now,
word.
Now, who do you think they were trying to appeal to with Bob Hope at that point? What demographic were they going for?
I think they were going for general Americana. Feel good, buy American, buy Kmart stuff. Mm-hmm. Because I have to say, every time I've been to Kmart, there's a Kmart nearby, which is sadly more convenient for me than Target or anything else. Yeah. I just think of all the jokes about, you know, Tom Cruise saying Kmart sucks and going to Kmart for underwear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is what's still stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm. Now, I briefly mentioned the other Bob Hope.
Yes.
Should we talk about that?
Sure, go ahead.
All right, so Jeff and we did a college radio show.
Yeah.
Years ago. We've come so far. We've actually gotten worse. We went from being an actual radio station to your kitchen.
The next step up is tin cans.
Yes, we've come a long way from over the years. So, a comedy show. Jeff was like a college Dr. Demento kind of thing, you know?
It was a comedy show. Yeah. We had like 2 hours
pre-med,
once a week.
Pre-med Dr. Demento, yeah. And so there was a Bob Hope album about the bicentennial.
I actually don't remember this, so I'm very curious where you're
going. It was called 200 Years, and We Still Have Hope.
Oh, that's a terrible title.
That was it, yeah. So we played a cover where he played George Washington.
Okay.
And Lamont from Sanford and Son.
Wait, he played both George Washington and Lamont?
No, Lamont.
Oh, okay.
Whose name I can't remember right now.
Oh, he was George Washington and Lamont from Sanford
Lamont
and Son played
someone else. Crispus Attucks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Bob Hope, you know, the beloved... At the time, you're just an octogenarian.
Yeah.
Starts making lots of, like, watermelon jokes to Crispus Attucks. And, like, fried chicken jokes. And he's like, Crispus Attucks, like, I'm here joining the army. He's like, hey, I didn't know we gave basketball scholarships.
It's like the stuff that you saw in, like, the roast specials. Like, when Dean Martin came up, it's like, oh, how can they say that to Slappy White?
Yeah.
How can Slappy White be okay with that?
Well, no, I, even that, you felt like there was, like, you know...
It's kinship.
Yeah, kinship. Yeah. This is Bob Hope and, you know, with Lamont. And like, it's not like Lamont's getting great lines in on him. You know, he's just going on with, like, you know, lots of, like the most generic, like stereotypes you can imagine. Lots of, you know, I remember you mentioned chitlins, collard greens, fried chicken.
It's like they just had a list.
Yeah.
We don't want to not be racist about any of
this. It's like they were playing black stirred bingo. And wanted to hit as many as possible. Have we talked about anything about 1917 yet?
No, we should bring it up because we actually have a real sponsor this week.
Oh,
our sponsor this
real
week
sponsor
is Moon Pies. And Vinny, Moon Pie for you.
Thank you.
I bought us a 6-pack of Moon Pies. We don't have to eat all 6 of them. They're the same flavor, so it's not like we're going to...
Look, it says it's the 100-year anniversary of Moon Pies.
Yes, exactly.
It says that right here on the box.
Yes, and I have a special copy from the... moonpie.com explaining the story.
They sent us this, huh?
I bought it at a 99-cent store.
Okay.
So if you figure out a dollar divided by 6, that's how much it costs for one of these Moon Pie minis.
Mm-hmm.
But they're only 110 calories.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had a very big dinner, so I'm not particularly full. I'm not looking for a big dessert. So
one thing I've seen other Moon Pie brands. I always thought Moon Pie was a good generic term. That's like from the real Moon Pie company.
I'm going to tell you about that right now as I read our sponsorship.
All right, go ahead, yes.
Okay. History never tasted so good.
I'm going to eat a Moon Pie right now.
You know Moon Pies are delicious. You know they're the perfect combination of marshmallow, graham, and chocolate. But do you know how they came to be?
No.
It's an out-of-this-world story, so grab yourself a Moon Pie and sit right there while we spin our tale.
It's not a long story, is it?
We give you the moon. It all began in 1917 when a Kentucky coal miner asked our traveling salesman for a snack as big as the moon. Earl Mitchell reported back, and the bakery obliged with a tasty treat aptly named a Moon Pie. It was filling, fit in the lunch pail, and the coal miners loved it. The rest, as they say, is history. A star is born. Chattanooga Bakery produced over 100 items, but they knew they had something special with Moon Pie. At 5 cents each, Moon Pies were an affordable filling snack that just flew off the shelves. By 1929, the factory ladies you see here, because I'm reading from an online picture, they show some very unhappy women.
They're really miserable. Like, what I like about it is this delicious snack went from here to a coal mine. So it was never at any place of happiness any point.
Look at these pictures of the depression.
Yeah.
Like, any individual person you pick here, it's like, oh, she's got the worst life here. No, that one there. That
guy is the worst. And you're looking at it, and it's a group of middle-aged women. And you just know, though, in reality, this is child labor. They just live these hard lives. Yeah. It's like 14-year-old girls here who all look about 50.
And this guy who basically has no chin.
Yeah, and it's going to just travel the path from here to, you know, like a miserable truck. And to be unloaded in, like, you know, a filthy coal mine.
Oh, wait, I like the next picture. Because it's just a random picture of World War II that makes it seem like that Moon Pie saved the world.
Mm.
From Chattanooga to the world.
I imagine back then they painted pictures of Moon Pies on their planes.
When our brave servicemen went to war, Moon Pie went with them. Nothing said home more than a care package filled with their favorite hometown snack. From the front lines to the home front, Moon Pie was a comfort food the nation turned to during the heroic days of World War II.
So they weren't rationed.
I guess they weren't rationed. And also, it makes it seem like there was no other food than Moon Pie. No other entertainment than eating Moon Pies. I'm opening one up directly in front of the microphone, which is...
I would eat mine. People probably heard me chewing, actually.
Yeah, that was fast. Well, these are
They're minis. They're minis. It's like the size of like a communion host.
Yeah. Booming times during the baby boom. America experienced unprecedented growth after the war, and so did Moon Pie. Parents needed a filling and wholesome snack to feed their kids, and Moon Pie fit the bill. I'm just going to pause for a second. They keep on bringing up the word filling. That's not normally something I'm associating with dessert.
Oh, man, I'm just going to burst from this 110 calories I consume.
Although, I guess with Snickers, they say Snickers is satisfying, and you think of, like, substantialness when you think of a Snickers bar, even though, like, okay, there's, like, 9 peanuts. It's not that much better than a Milky Way.
No.
No, but that's one of the sales pitches, that it's going to fill you up, and it's vaguely good for you.
It's like a meal. It's like eating a whole meal here. It's like a nice like Norman Rockwell painting they have here.
Yeah. Today, many of these boomers still recount fond childhood memories as they enjoy a childhood favorite. More popular than ever. I bought six of them for 99 cents. The 60s and 70s were a time to try new things. Moon Pie was happy to follow suit.
Some innovations in Moon Pie.
New products were introduced, including the Double Decker Deluxe, and new flavors like vanilla and banana. You know, that's what I think of when I think of the 1960s counterculture. Adding banana flavor to things.
No, I'm surprised they completely glossed over the moon landing. Right? Like, I imagined when we walked on the moon, the Moon Pie brand got very excited about this.
I believe they paid for most of the Apollo mission, right? Because according to this, they're a hugely prosperous company.
Yeah, right now Mars Bar Company, actually, trying to fund our first manned mission to Mars.
There are a lot of desserts that deal with outer space.
Actually, wait, I want to say
the Milky Way, the Mars Bar.
I just had this look. Yeah. Do they still make a Mars Bar?
Yes,
they make. I don't think I've seen a Mars Bar.
It's in England.
It's only in England.
Only in England.
Why?
International commerce. I don't know why.
Well, it's the M&M Mars Company, right?
Yeah,
but they don't have an actual Mars.
No, and it's weird because the Mars Bar is not what we thought of as the Mars Bar. It's something else. And I can't remember what that other thing was, too. It was a bit of trivia that used to be very important to me, but has now fallen out of my head. So all I can remember is I used to know it.
That the Mars Bar, which we don't have.
Yeah.
Is different than the Mars Bar.
That they do have.
Yeah.
No matter their size or flavor preference, more people were reaching for a moon pie than ever before. That may just be due to population expansion. The same way that more people saw Beauty and the Beast and saw, like, you know, Snow White. Like, well, it's just more people and more theaters. It doesn't mean it's a better movie. 100 years and still going strong. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Today, people love moon pies as much as they ever have. Maybe even more with the mini version and new flavors to choose from. It's a tradition passed down from generation to generation. We're very grateful for that. We currently produce about 1 million a day, so grab you one soon. Slow down for just a minute and enjoy.
I want to see the factory now. Is it like still like a?
Does it still look like a Depression era photograph? Yeah, like of misery.
Yeah. Is it still made in Kentucky? Have they outsourced?
I'm eating my moon pie now. And it's just as dry as I remembered.
Yeah, that's the thing. I barely need a drink right now.
Yeah. I can whip up some Postum. Because I have not touched that.
Is it still in your cabinet?
Oh, yeah. It's still in there. Is it going to be there forever? When we move out of the house, the new owners are going to inherit Postum. And they're going to think, oh, my God. This has been here for 103 years. I'm not even chewing. I'm just making like digestive sounds in the microphone.
It is. It's like eating a sponge.
Yeah.
They're not bad.
No.
You know, I just feel like you need a gallon of milk to go along with it.
Yeah.
Imagine being stuck in a coal mine. No, like there's no like nothing to drink.
You know, I had a whole book about coal mines, and you weren't listening when I talked to you about it. I imagined being in a coal mine a whole lot, and my experience in a cave taught me a lot about coal mines, too.
So you're hoping those coal mine jobs come back, because you could just jump into a managerial job.
I love the stat that there are more people working at Arby's working in the coal industry right now, which mostly speaks to, like, automation, I think, more than the fact that we don't use coal anymore, because we're still using coal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going on to birthdays. April 16th, a man named Barry Nelson is having a birthday. Barry Nelson is an actor, but he is best known for being the first person to play James Bond.
Really?
Yeah.
There was a unknown James Bond movie.
You know how in the 1960s and 50s and 60s they'd have like the Playhouse 90 sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they made a version of Casino Royale back in like 1958 or something. And he played James Bond in that.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, they decided to make real movies out of him. They got Sean Connery. And then somehow they made that weird one with David Niven and Woody Allen.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen that Casino Royale. But I wanted to talk with you about James Bond. What's your Bond background? How many of them have you seen?
Only a few. And they kind of blend together.
They don't kind of blend together. They absolutely
to me. Like, so I may have seen one, or I may have seen 50. I don't know. One or the other.
Think about how much more confusing it would be if they didn't switch actors. If it was the same guy.
Yeah.
Like I could show you two Steven Seagal movies right now, and one of them, okay, well, he's like, he's old and fat, and he just kind of looks like a statue. And the other one, he's like, you know, thin and about 30.
I know the Roger Moore ones, there's really more gadgets, right?
Yeah.
It seems like they've gotten more action film lately.
I got into a real Bond kick the last couple of years.
And yeah, but the Roger Moore ones were all like him, like, you know, I don't know, it's like they almost seem like a parody of
James
Bond.
But it happens in each of the actors who run Bond. They start off grim and gritty, and then they add some more quips and some more gadgets, and then they go way overboard with the gadgets and the jokes and like having five different women, and then they always peel back and they have a very grounded, down to earth episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll go wacky again, and then they'll just replace James Bond and start from scratch.
No, this the new guy, the latest new, guy, yeah. Daniel
Craig.
He's been Bond what? Twice? Three times?
No, four times.
Four times, whatever. See, exactly. I don't know. has he gone wacky yet?
They began to start putting the wacky in. In the first one, in the 2006 Casino Royale, there was, like, no wackiness. And he purposely makes a point when someone asks him, he asks a bartender for a drink, and the person says, would you like your martini shaken or stirred? And he just looks and goes, do I look like I give a damn?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great line, especially to start off like the new James Bond.
Yeah.
To say, like, he's not prissy. He doesn't care about his, like, you know, preferences for drinks. Just give him something with alcohol in it. But the problem is it's not really James Bond. Part of James Bond is that he is a prissy guy. He is very, very... I've been reading the Bond books recently, and so much of it is about food and drink. Mm-hmm. And he's just
talking. Bow ties. A lot of bow tie talk.
He's always talking about what he's eating, what he's drinking, what he's wearing. And every once in a while, he'll kill someone. Then he goes back to thinking about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, he'll think about women and about how he's not very good thinking about women because he was hurt by someone one time. And he's just in his head the whole time. And he doesn't care about very much. And the way to convey that is to be very, like, very mean and coarse, which is what Sean Connery did.
Yeah.
But then when Roger Moore came along, he was just like
full-on dandy. It was,
yes.
Like a dandy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was impossible to imagine him punching someone. Much less shooting someone with a gun.
Yeah, like wouldn't even look like the punches would hurt.
Yeah. And apparently he even told the producers that he didn't like firing a gun. And if they could just, like, not write James Bond ever shooting a gun anymore, that would be fine. 007 license to...
Do you know, actually, what I know most about with James Bond is playing GoldenEye on Nintendo 64.
Yes.
That's most of my James Bond knowledge.
Right.
Actually.
Right. You know about the Golden Gun mode because you know that, but you don't know why it's called that.
It means you can kill anybody or something. Or,
yeah.
Right?
That was that was the James Bond, like, returning to groundedness. The man with the Golden Gun was Christopher Lee, who played a guy named Scaramanga. And the Golden Gun thing was that he had like a gold pen and a gold cigarette case and a gold lighter. And he could snap them onto each other to make a single shot gun. And then he could, like, go and shoot someone and then disassemble it. And you would never know that he had shot them. Now, that's great for, like, an assassin who's, like, you know, very, very well paid and high in society. It's not very good for, like, an action movie because you're only shooting one guy. And it's not a very nice looking gun. It really does look like you just glued a bunch of things together and spray-painted them gold. I'm not sure who my favorite James Bond is. Part of me wants to say Daniel Craig, but that's just because, you know, he's the current Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up watching the Roger Moore Bonds, and normally...
Those were the ones I think were on TV the most.
Yeah, they're definitely on TV the most. But then that would make me say that A View to a Kill would be my favorite Bond movie. And that's generally considered, like, one of the worst, if not the worst Bond film. But
one guy in the middle is kind of forgotten. Timothy
Dalton.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got dealt a bad hand because
you don't know why he was dealt a bad hand, do you?
No, I don't even remember much about Timothy Dalton other than that, that he only had two movies and then they some sort of licensing thing. There's always licensing stuff with Bond, but I don't know what that means other than that. Well, we're going to stop making them for 6 years and we'll just say it's a licensing thing.
Yeah, and then Pierce Brosnan, who was the guy who like looked like James Bond.
He looked like Bond.
Yeah, like you know, he was meant to play him.
Right.
Of, yeah. There's...
Right, but they're... But then he was stuck because every role he's ever done afterward is just like a joke on James Bond. He's played so many assassins and spies, and it's
I couldn't tell you anything he's done other than James Bond and Mrs. Doubtfire.
he was Remington Steele, a show I did not watch.
Yeah, that's a show that I never watched either. I just remember being advertised.
Yeah,
it was like, I remember commercials for Remington Steele.
Yeah. Okay, we're moving on. Our main feature this week, we are going to try to narrate an entire movie again.
I don't want to do this.
It's going to be a short.
It didn't work last time.
I think it's going to work better this time because I've watched most of this. So I'll be able to do a
so
better
So you're going to have like quips and I won't.
No. I'm going to be narrating. You need to provide all humor on the spot, as always.
Well, that's not really fair.
Okay, so we are watching a Charlie Chaplin classic. He made four movies in 1917.
This is 20 minutes long. We're going to watch the whole thing?
We'll maybe cut it down if need be.
Oh, God.
And officially, it's 24 minutes. But this is very good. This is one of his all-time greats. It's called The Immigrant.
It's already dying.
It's more important now than ever. Okay. We now begin. If you want to sync up your story screen experience with us.
It's on YouTube.
Charles Chaplin in The Immigrant. Cast. Immigrants. Charlie Chaplin. Oh, I'm too late. The head waiter, a diner, and the artist. Okay, we have an establishing shot of a ship at sea. And
there's stock footage of immigrants.
Yes. Caption, a widow and her daughter. Notice they include these people before we see Chaplin as a little tramp.
You know what's funny is immigrants have not changed over the years. This is 100 years ago.
Right, and the stereotypes are still
and
exactly
the same. They're still there with like... you know, the head coverings and the scarves.
And... Yeah, and here's Charlie Chaplin looking for all the world like he's throwing up over the side of the ship. Ah, but the trick is that he was fishing and he pulled up a fish. Very happy about it.
I imagine it got big laughs in 1917.
Yeah, oh, he throws the fish down and it kisses this one shtetl guy with a beard. And the guy's like, ah, you've been bitten by a fish.
Community theater production of Fiddler.
And the boat's swaying back and forth and Chaplin is trying to walk, but he's swaying too.
He's...
As people are hurling over the side some more.
He's dressed as his normal little tramp character.
Uh-huh.
Is that character always supposed to be an immigrant? Like, was this meant to be, like, when he was the little tramp, was he, like, was it a commentary on being an immigrant in America?
Oh, so this is, like, retroactive continuity by saying that he was always, like, a Polish immigrant, and just now we're seeing the origin story?
Yeah, like, I'm wondering, is it, like... All the time, was it like, was this supposed to be an immigrant character?
I don't think so. I think they'll just do like one with him in a bowling alley and then with him, like,
you're
you know,
talking to the mic. Right? You're killing me here. You're like holding your mic down by your crotch while I'm doing commentary.
Okay, so Chaplin is feeling very sick, and there's an old man sitting next to him who's hiccuping, and he's hiccuping, and now Charlie Chaplin is hiccuping, and now their hiccups are syncing up like women's cycles in college, according to dorm room legend. I don't know if that's actually true. I never actually asked anyone. Mm-hmm. But they're hiccuping in sequence, which is...
You don't go to groups of women and ask what their cycle is?
No, I don't. Do you?
No.
No?
No, I was hoping you did.
Caption said, dinner time, and everyone is now running to eat. Chaplin 2 and the hiccuping man, and... Oh, he's doing this little one-footed scoot in order to get in. And this is the classic scene.
I've seen this.
Yes, they've built this set on a big gimbal, and it's rocking back and forth. There's a woman literally sliding back and forth on the ground. Chaplin falls on her. He's sliding back and forth like she's a rolling pin. His hat is sliding back and forth. The passengers seated on the benches are swaying back and forth. He's now sliding back and forth.
Jeff, if people are syncing this up, they could see that. You're giving just play-by-play.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe there's a different strategy.
I don't know.
Okay, this is another classic scene. Someone is serving soup into a bowl.
And yes, it goes sliding.
Okay. Yeah. Chaplin gets a bite, and then the shtetl dude gets a bite, and then Chaplin gets a bite.
Now, Chaplin had syphilis, right?
Why does everyone have to have syphilis?
No, I think, no, I'm serious. I think he didn't he have some kind of like, didn't he die from an STD or something?
He was in his like 70s when he died. I don't know.
People in their 70s can't get an STD?
No, I'm sure.
I'm sorry, no, it was years ago. It was VD.
Oh, VD.
Yeah. Something totally different there.
It was just called a social disease back then. Oh, mm-hmm. And now we've met the woman and daughter from the beginning who were introduced before Chaplin, because he's making this not just as a series of comedic skits, he's trying to tell a real story. So we've established the woman before Chaplin, and now Chaplin is looking at the woman who he's given his seat to, and now he's going to throw up again.
I like that.
Here we go. Here's a joke.
Immigrants back then basically dressed like genies. Everyone's like, just make a genie outfit.
Like low-rent Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
So there's a caption that said, more rolling, and you were expecting the C's to be rolling, but instead it's Charlie Chaplin playing dice with a burly farmer-looking guy.
Which was the immigrant stereotype of the time.
Was it?
No, I'm guessing that. Oh, like okay. They came here with their evil games of chance.
Now, I've watched this a couple of times now, and there's a lot of sophisticated jokes that Chaplin is doing with dice. He's making lots of little hand gesture jokes, but it's all like close-up magic basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it would work as well in a regular crowd. Like, we're watching it on YouTube right now, and it's relatively small, so it's hard to see that he rolls one die instead of two, and then instead of rolling the second die, picks up the first one to re-roll it, and rolls the second one with it, which is, you know, cheating. But he did it in a way so that it didn't look like it was cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmer guy's getting upset.
Where's this book coming from? Like, where do you, like, you had to guess where they were, because we have a guy who's like a cowboy. We've had a genie. We've had a woman who's like a Muslim woman.
And then the cast of Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah, like where do you think they were immigrating from?
You know, I always wondered when a boat came from like the old country and took people to America, did it make multiple stops? Was it like a local or an express?
Like, they, you know, just picked up people along the way.
Yeah, like, are there so many people from Belarus? Like, okay, this boat is just filled with Belarus people. Let's just bring them all in. No need to stop anywhere else.
Maybe they all went to, say, like, they gathered in, like England.
Oh, okay.
And then went there.
Yeah. That would explain why Chaplin's here, because he is, of course, an immigrant himself. He was English-born and got his fame in America.
Does that count as an immigrant?
Of course it counts as an immigrant.
I don't think being British counts as an immigrant.
Just because he speaks English as a first language?
They fit in too well. Like, there's no... I have a friend who... She's technically a first-generation American because her mother's British.
Okay.
But I say I don't think you count as an immigrant because, like... You know, like
the culture's not too...
The culture's not different. Like, you know, I think, like, her family came here to, like, run a branch of, like, Chase Manhattan or something.
Yeah? Okay, I would say this. If you were Canadian and you came to America, I don't think you can call yourself an immigrant the same way that someone who came from Vietnam gets to call themselves an immigrant.
Here's the countries where you're not an immigrant.
Okay.
England.
Yes.
Not an immigrant.
Uh-huh.
Canada.
Yep.
Not an immigrant.
Okay.
How about Australia?
Australia's pretty far away.
It's far away, but it's like, they got a picture of, you know, an Australian can just like come in your sub shop and nobody like, oh, like his hardship is that people go like, oh, that's a funny accent, and that's it. There's no like hardship beyond that. It's hard to buy Vegemite. Like, but there's no real like, you know, nothing you're really going through as being an Aussie. No, right, Australian non-immigrant.
The whole time Vinny's been talking, Charlie Chaplin has been playing games of chance with the farmer.
Yeah, I know.
The farmer's been cheated.
It's not much is happening.
Yeah. Here. Well, there was a lot if someone was paying attention, but Chaplin now has a lot of
money. I think this is an interesting tangent we're on here, actually.
It is. And the tangent is now done because we're going to go back to talking about
this, Irish immigrants, of course.
Wait, the Irish are immigrants?
Irish. Not wow. Amish, Irish.
Oh, well, yeah, but the Irish count as immigrants, but the English don't.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, I'm as someone who's descended from Irish immigrants, I'm on board. I mean, like, six generations back. Well, I mean,
no, but think about the way the Irish were treated.
Right.
Yeah, so they're, you know, nobody made signs of, like, British and dogs need not apply for a job.
So, okay, so that I think is a salient point. If you are welcomed when you come to America, you don't count as an immigrant.
Maybe that's it, yes.
So we have so many immigrants nowadays, and they haven't even come to America yet. We are proactively telling the rest of the world, we don't want you. Welcome to 2017. But going back to 1917, Charlie Chaplin is sitting next to the mother and daughter, who are now crying because they have no money. Chaplin, in a very nice gesture, takes his winnings, puts it into the mother's pocket, and then in a really hilarious bit, decides against it, takes it out, peels a dollar or two off, and then puts the rest back. And then again, it's like, no, no, that's too much. And then takes it out and is recalculating how much money he's going to give to the old woman.
Do you think, like, Charlie Chaplin had somebody like you when showing these movies? Like,
explaining the plot?
Yeah, there's a guy there just, like, doing a running commentary.
Oh, the purser has been watching Charlie Chaplin, is accusing him of being a pickpocket, and yells, "Miss, come here." And Chaplin, of course, was not trying to be caught. He was trying to be a good Samaritan. Mm-hmm. But now the truth is going to come out, and he's looking bemused and like the cat that ate the canary, because the woman with $1 million smile now realizes she has all of Charlie Chaplin's savings.
She is now rich. You watch a Charlie Chaplin movie like it's like an inner city movie theater showing a horror film.
And now I would advise him not to go into the room, to definitely not go into the room, to run and leave because there's a man with a knife.
What would Bob Pope say about the inner city movie theater, by the way? Just checked off his racist bingo card right there.
Okay, so they're finally going to arrive in what they call the Land of Liberty. And you're going to see a shot of the Statue of Liberty from 100 years ago. But as you're going to notice, it's going from the left of the screen to the right, which means they are leaving New York Harbor, not going in.
Oh.
Which maybe it means that they're immigrating from New York back to Poland.
So how much time is left on this, huh?
Yeah. 3 minutes? No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
14 minutes. Okay, they have a literal rope that's tied up to a wall, and they're using to corral the crowd back. And one by one, they're pulling people out of this newly generated crowd in order to let them off the boat.
Do we have a quiz this week?
We do have a quiz this week. You have to listen to all of this before you get to the quiz.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So, the woman that he gave the money to is saying goodbye, the mother is giving his hand to be kissed, and Chaplin is waving goodbye as best he can. He is wearing a very fake mustache, by the way. In the close-ups, you can tell that is not remotely a real mustache.
Was it ever a real mustache? Like, in some movies, was he wearing a real one?
I'm not sure.
Sometimes Groucho has a real mustache sometimes. And sometimes it's just painted.
Sometimes it's grease paint. And sometimes it's grease paint over the real mustache.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen close-ups of Groucho, and it's like, oh, he's got that weird Cesar Romero thing.
Oh, yeah. I used to hate that so much. Like,
yeah.
When the Joker would have, like...
Yeah, commit to the part, man. Commit to the part.
I can't get rid of my mustache. That's what I'm assuming Cesar Romero sounded like.
Because you do not know what Cesar Chavez looks like. So, Chaplin is now in America. He did his Chaplin walk into a restaurant and is sitting down, and...
Is that Curly?
No, that's the man who is playing the burly farmer. He's now playing a burly waiter.
Now, all right, now, are we to assume that this is the burly farmer? He came to America, cleaned himself up, got a job as a waiter.
No, it's like stock footage. It's like how that the old guy and the little skinny guy from Benny Hill kept reappearing in all the skits. You weren't supposed to think it's the same three people in this town. It's just
they're just playing skits. Multiple.
Yeah, roles. And he's got this weird thing with his eyebrows. He looks like a Lobo almost. Mm-hmm. Lobo, the DC Comics villain, not Sheriff Lobo from the 1970s.
I went with Sheriff Lobo, and I kind of just let... I really didn't pay much attention to it. I went, oh, I guess it kind of looks like Claude Akins.
There's a good recurring gag here. Well, Vinny would disagree with me, but...
I don't know. Listen, I like Chaplin. I don't know if I want to explain it on a podcast.
The waiter was trying to get Chaplin to take his hat off, but Chaplin kept putting the hat back on. But it only works in silent film, because in real life you would just have the waiter say, "Take your hat off, sir," and Chaplin would do so. But in silence, you can have the guy glower and knock the hat off, and Chaplin not realize that his hat accidentally came off and kept putting it back on. So Chaplin doesn't have much money, but he is ordering food. He has ordered beans, coffee, and a very long baguette. And Charlie Chaplin is now going to sip his coffee.
So they went to a restaurant and ordered beans at the restaurant.
I'm guessing beans is the cheapest thing on
the
menu.
But it's like a high-end restaurant with like this guy with like, you know, like a nice jacket and tie as your waiter. And yet they're eating hobo food.
I think at the time this is what most of it was. Like there were stories about how like you would have like meat one day a week, which means that 6 days a week you were you know a vegetarian not by choice, which meant things like beans, which had protein in it, would be like your main meal,
mm-hmm.
and like the exclusive meal. It's not like you had side dishes.
Now, is this guy with him also an immigrant because he has a big mustache too?
He does have a big mustache, but. It's just the weird way that restaurants worked back then. You would sit in a booth with a random stranger because they didn't have better seating options.
Hold on. Did they, or is that just what they did in old movies?
I think they did do that. I think you would sit next to a stranger.
If you watch like a sitcom, say, from like the 80s, you would assume that when people ate dinner, they all ate on one side of the table, so that way the camera would get a good shot of them.
Oh, that could be true. And they always had their apartment set up so there's really nothing on the fourth wall.
No. that's where the TV is.
It was always weird when they had the inset shot of the TV and they had to build a fake fourth wall.
Yeah.
And I always be like, wait, I need to imagine that that's been there the whole time. So, Chaplin has met the woman he met on the boat. They were both at the same restaurant. He's invited her to sit with him.
She's doing well for herself in America.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she has all of his money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to become an issue because Chaplin does not have enough money to pay for this meal. So Chaplin right now is doing a gentlemanly thing and he is introducing his lady friend who's taken the seat of the mustache guy. And now the waiter is glumly going off to give her some food also. And as Chaplin walked in a few minutes ago, he passed a man in a white suit who looks...
Also has a mustache.
Yeah, who looks kind of like a prospector. He looks vaguely drunk, kind of like a W.C. Fields guy.
Have you seen much W.C. Fields?
No.
I've only seen a little bit. It's like, that holds up, actually.
Yeah, it does. Because he has a surly drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah,
surly drunk. We still have surly drunk.
Yeah.
I think if we had a surly drunk character now, though, mm-hmm. getting into far more fistfights and domestic violence incidents.
Speaking of fistfights, there's going to be an extended fistfight between the waiter and this drunk here, who's not surly, but is just going to get beaten up like crazy. In a very good series of comedy bits, which Chaplin is not involved in at all.
This is like a vicious beating, actually. Hold on.
It just keeps going. Watch, right. He gets caught.
There's a drunk who's getting, instead of being thrown out of the bar, the waiters are just basically stomping him gangland style.
And now Chaplin is going to ask what that man did so terribly wrong. And the waiter is going to respond back that he was 10 cents short on his tip.
Well, back then, back then,
10 cents.
That was like probably enough for an apartment.
Well, it wasn't that much, but it was like $1 or $2. It wasn't nothing, but it was like one of the things he ordered, not everything. So he was able to pay most of it.
I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. I drop change all the time. There's change in my, in my cup holders in my car.
Mm-hmm.
There's change in my couch cushions. I drop change on my dresser. Like, I just drop change. Like, you gather all up. There's like, you know, I don't know, like $100 in change I've dropped.
Now, you don't have like a jar you put it in?
I have a jar, but something else, sometimes it just falls out of my pocket. Where, like, you know, I lose change. Mm-hmm. I always think about, like, you know, I drop a quarter and that's like no big deal.
Yeah.
The idea that back then it's like, oh my God, that would have bought us a steak.
Well, it's not like you're dropping $20 bills nowadays.
Yeah, but I feel like it's much easier to lose change.
Yeah.
Like, the idea like you could lift your couch cushions up and be like, oh, all right, let's go food shopping.
So, the waiter's getting ready to give Chaplin his bill. Chaplin is getting ready to punch the waiter, but is also trying to pretend that he's also able to pay. The waiter is getting ready to give the bill. He gives the bill with a look in his face like, I know you can't pay this. Chaplin has the world's worst poker face, and instead of paying the bill, asks for more. He asks for coffee for his
lady. Are we supposed to root for characters like this?
Yes. This is the classic American hustle guy.
He's stealing from like a small business. It's not
he hasn't stolen yet. He hasn't.
It's not like he's at like some like an Applebee's or something.
No.
Where like, you know, all right, well, you know, they don't really need the money. This is like a little mom and pop.
Well, Please. You don't, but Crucially, you don't see mom and pop. You only see the mean waiter. And you know not to like the waiter because he just beat up some guy for being 10 cents short.
What if the waiter is the owner? That 10 cents is like, you know, wow. Hey, man, I'm trying to pay for my kid's school.
Right. Right. That you're right. It's like the it's like the Les Miserables thing writ small. Mm-hmm. Where you're forced to break the law in order to keep on living.
But, all right, Les Miserables, he stole bread to feed his family.
Right.
This guy is getting a meal for free to try to get laid.
I was going to say, are you saying beans are better than bread?
Yeah.
Oh, as the waiter was walking away, a silver dollar fell out of his pocket on the ground. And Chaplin has noticed it. He did a thing where he crossed his legs, but his foot went right on it. And hey, he was about to pick it up, but the waiter stepped on it.
Jeff, is it time for the quiz?
The waiter moved his foot, but then moved it right back. If only the waiter walks away, Chaplin gets the dollar. He can then pay for his meal.
And oh, good Lord, meal. Please, let's move on to the quiz.
Should we just predict how it ends?
We're on hour 6 of the show. How much time is on the show? I don't even know. How much? Let's see.
50 minutes.
Oh, yes, I know. Oh, my God. Yes. You didn't realize that commenting on a 30-minute long movie might not work? Commenting on a 5-minute movie wasn't your lesson last time?
But we'll learn our lessons for the next 3 Charlie Chaplin's movies.
Oh, no.
Before we get to the quiz.
I have a feeling. I'm going to guess this.
Okay.
My guess is that when we do commentary on a movie, mm-hmm. you've done very little show prep.
That is true.
Right?
Yes. This was the break glass in case I didn't have enough time to prep the episode. So he gave the silver dollar.
Oh, God, please, just do the quiz.
He gave a silver dollar to the waiter. The waiter bit it, and it bent in half. So the waiter had a fake dollar the whole time. He only realized it now when Chaplin tried to pay.
Okay. I hope nobody's
listening. Oh, this fat guy with a big Russian beard is making all sorts of
people movements. Listen to this while commuting. They may fall asleep or intentionally drive into the other lane.
But I think he is going to cast the woman as a star in a show and therefore pay for their meal. That's going to be how it ends. He doesn't dine and dash. Even though the waiter has been set up to be like the heavy and the bad guy, he is not going to be Les Miserables. He's not going to break the law.
Okay, good. All right, let's move on to the quiz.
Okay, fine. We will. We're going to end this thing 4 minutes short. But if something really, really funny happens in the last 4 minutes, it's on you.
Nobody's still listening. There's nobody listening anymore.
Okay, on to our quiz.
We had 7 listeners.
Start of our quiz. The buildings of 1917. So wanted this. You so wanted this. And now it's here. You have to hear about architecture.
I like architecture.
Well, I Am Peg was born this week. Mm-hmm. Quick little birthday quiz. So we can tie this in with him. None of these are his buildings, obviously, because he is he was a baby.
Yeah, well, I mean,
not expected to be an architect.
He was making Legos.
Well, he was making poops at the time. So, these are all buildings and structures and infrastructure that was built or completed in 1917. There's a long, long list of these, and most all of them things you've like either never heard of or just like, well, I guess Muskogee, Illinois needed a post office, and I guess it was built then, but like. You know, no one outside of Muskogee cares, and no one really inside Muskogee cares too much.
No, Muskogee's in Oklahoma.
Oh, it's in Oklahoma?
Yeah, you don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. Okie from Muskogee.
Oh, okay. I don't know that song.
No?
No, but I don't know how I know Muskogee.
I don't know.
Why I thought it was in Illinois.
No, Muskogee.
Oh, okay.
It's a Merle Haggard song.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know more about country than I do.
I guess so.
Okay. So, we're going from country to New England. Paragon Park in the town of Hull, Massachusetts, which was an amusement park, opened the largest one of these in 1917. Did they open a carousel, a roller coaster, or a boardwalk?
I'm going to go with a roller coaster.
Yes, roller coaster.
Because it's right around the time of, like,
the cyclone?
The cyclone, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this one was 98 feet high, had an 88-foot drop, for about 20 years, it was the largest roller coaster in the world.
I love old roller coasters like that. Like, you've been on the Cyclone?
No, I've never been on the Cyclone. I'd be scared.
That's what's funny, man. You go to like a Six Flags. Mm-hmm. There's much larger, faster structures than the Cyclone.
Yeah.
But on those, you feel like they've been tested. And there's, like, a good engine. To me, like, a scary ride is more like the stuff they put by, like, a carnival. Like, a traveling carnival. Like, the Tilt-A-Whirl.
Yeah. I read a Penn Jillette essay where he said, like, the best magic trick he ever saw was by a totally incompetent 19-year-old magician who used, like, 8 times the lighter fluid he was supposed to for some dove pan trick. And he's doing it in front of an audience of magicians who all realize he's going to bake that dove alive, but somehow he screwed up in so many ways that the dove survived, and they were all like, that's the greatest trick I've ever seen. Okay, next question. This lovely, beloved airport was built in Dallas in 1917.
What?
This lovely, beloved airport was built in Dallas in 1917.
Oh, I don't... What is it?
It's not Dallas-Fort Worth Airport.
No.
It's Love Field.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were some clues because I used the word
love. I know love, yeah.
Yeah, which...
I would say Lovecraft, but I knew that wasn't it.
No, not Lovecraft. Okay. The Metropolis Bridge was completed in 1917. It goes over a river in what town?
I don't know.
Metropolis, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know they have like a little Superman shrine there, but that's not the actual Metropolis where Superman is from, because that's not a real place.
No. But what is the Metropolis? Superman's from supposed to be New York, basically?
Yeah, the winking nod is that Metropolis is New York by day and Gotham is New York by night, which is why they don't really show it on a map. But they actually did show it on a map one time in the 80s.
Gotham's New Jersey, right, actually?
Yes. They said that Metropolis was in Delaware, and that meant that Gotham was in Jersey, which I love. I love that Gotham was a South Jersey town. But it's weird to think of Gotham as South Jersey. Batman is a Jersey guy.
Somewhere around like Marlton.
Yeah. Okay, the Ben Franklin Parkway connects the Philadelphia Art Museum to Philadelphia City Hall in what city?
I'm going to guess Philly.
Philadelphia, yeah. Correct. They're not all hard. Okay, we're going up to New York a little bit. The BMT Broadway, New York City subway line, opened in 1917. There is 4 yellow train services that run on it now. They're all named after letters. Name any one of them.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Basically, name a letter.
F.
F, no. The letters we were looking for were N, Q, R, and W.
Oh.
Okay. A country to be named later opened the Obama line of trains in 1917. This is not named after our former president. What country is the Obama line located?
Kenya.
Very good guess. The guess I thought you'd say, but no, Japan.
Oh.
Obama does sound like a Japanese name now that you think of it.
Yeah, it does. I just always, for years, they said he was Kenyan. And
yeah. Okay.
I thought maybe that was their number one clue.
You know a little bit more about sports than I do, so you may have a chance of getting this. Camp Randall Stadium opened up in 1917. To this day, the players of what Big Ten football team play there?
That's something I know very little about, college football.
Ah, okay. But did the Jeopardy-style clue of saying Big Ten football team help?
Not particularly, no. Because there's a bunch of teams. Yeah. It's possible.
Yeah, there's at least 10. It was the University of Wisconsin-Madison Badgers.
Okay.
The Badgers. So, I am now looking for the state where you could find the Yolo County Courthouse. It was built in 1917, and it soon got an Instagram account and was annoying people ever since. Actually spelt YOLO. YOLO.
Is there really a way for me to actually like guess this from a clue, or I just have to like name a state and I'll probably be wrong? Ohio.
California.
Okay.
Okay. The only 2 windmills built in 1917 were built in what stereotypical windmill-loving country?
That would be... Switzerland.
Close. Netherlands.
Netherlands. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Finally. This one, I actually, this is my favorite of the questions. H.M. Van Dusen built a factory in Westfield, Massachusetts in 1917 to make what? Now, the hint I'm going to give you is that it's the example of something that's out of date. But they were still building it in 1917. They were still making them so often that they needed to build a factory in 1917.
Now, it's out of date now or 1917?
It's the example of what you think of as an out-of-date thing, like eight tracks.
Like the stagecoach, like a horse-drawn carriage.
Yes, like that.
Okay.
Yes.
That was my guess.
Oh, they made buggy whips.
Okay.
Even in 1917, they were making buggy whips.
Mm-hmm. I imagine we still need, just for Amish people and the, handsome carriage guys.
I don't know how many different types of whips there are. Like, Indiana Jones famously had a bull whip, but are you actually hitting, like cow bulls? Like, is that what it's
that whip, and then you have, I guess, the buggy whip, and then you have, a riding crop.
Riding crop.
Then you have, a dominatrix kind of one,
I always thought that was a riding crop. And there's a cat of nine tails, and I don't know if that's only a sexual thing, or if that had some sort of purpose. Like, that was used to keep the foxes away, and then someone decided, I can use this for sexy time. That concludes This Week in 1917. We'll see you next week. Until then, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.